Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 17th of February, 2000.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest. Good evening or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours, stretching from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains out west eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the bowl, and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. And in a moment, we're going to tell you a ghost story. There are two gentlemen in West Virginia who are going to tell you what's going on back there right now. Not something that happened in the past, something going on right now. So all of that directly ahead, and then we'll talk about dreams a little bit later. Because as you know, I've been having some pretty weird ones. We've got a lot to do tonight, so in a moment, we get underway in West Virginia.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 17th of February, 2000.
Now, we're about to go to West Virginia because I received the following email. My friend Lawrence has an entity or entities now in his house. They touch him. They create chaos at night, but not every night. I've had personally, that's a writer of this fax, three experiences with it or them myself while watching TV playing cards. And the first time I visited his house, we're old friends. We go back to grade school together. Only recently got together for motorcycle rides on Sundays. And so without taking you through this secondhand, which, you know, there's much more obviously in the email, I called these two gentlemen, and here they are. And I want to be sure it's okay to use your last names before I use them. I have Lawrence with me. Good morning, Lawrence.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Okay, your name then is Lawrence Knotts, right?
Right.
And where are you, Lawrence?
Located in Barber County, West Virginia.
West Virginia. All right. And your friend, Sonny? Sonny, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And where are you? How far away?
About 5 miles, Nesterville.
5 miles away. All right. What I heard earlier today, when I talked to you, Lawrence, I thought was horrifying. You said, you told me, I guess you listen to me at night because you can't sleep at night anyway. Is that right?
True.
You can't sleep.
The signal's only occasional at my location.
You told me things, entities, something, even would go so far as to gouge at your eyes?
Correct.
All right. How long has this been going on, Lawrence?
Approximately 3 years.
3 years. You've been living in a haunted house for 3 years. How did it begin?
Well, I had sold some piece of timber that had an Indian grave on it, and the week I sold it, something showed up in my house.
Wait, now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You sold a piece of, you said, timber? You
yes.
mean like land with timber?
Yeah, I inherited the property.
Yes, sir.
And I sold the timber off of it.
Oh, in other words, you still own the property, but you allowed them to cut the timber.
Right.
Gotcha. 1 week later, it begins.
Yeah.
What began to happen?
Well, first of all, I was laying in bed, had my left arm sticking out over the edge of the bed, relaxing. And
May I stop you and ask you, are you married?
No, I'm divorced.
You're divorced, all right, so you live alone?
I do now, though. problem. I did have my mother living with me, and it thing got to attacking her, and she left. And she messed with my girlfriend, and she took off. And messed with my daughters, and they took off.
Oh, my God. Well, this has really ruined your life then, hasn't it?
It's made it very trying.
All right. Anyway, so here you are a week later, your hands hanging off the bed, which a lot of people do when they're asleep. Were you awake or asleep?
I was definitely awake.
Definitely awake.
I just laid down in 3 minutes of laying down, and I was definitely awake.
And what happened?
Something grabbed my arm, felt like a person's hand grabbed me by the wrist. And I immediately took my right hand, that was my left hand was laying out over the edge of the bed, and I took my right hand and tried to grab what had me.
Natural, natural reaction, yeah. That's what you'd try to do. Of course, you'd reach right around immediately, and you couldn't grab anything? Like, you know, what, grab?
I didn't strike nothing with my right hand.
Was the pressure still on your left hand?
It released when I grabbed for it. It released off my left hand.
All right.
My left wrist.
All right. It was kind of then, hello there. I'm here.
Yeah.
Something like that?
It didn't speak at that time. It didn't make no noises at that time, but I got up and went through the house and checked everything, and everything was peaceful and quiet, so like it should have been.
Uh-huh.
I went back to bed, decided, well, I'll throw the other arm out on the other side of the bed and see what happened.
Oh, did you now? See, now, I wouldn't have done that. I'd have been scared, you know what, Liz. And so I wouldn't have done that, but you did that. You put the other arm out.
Yeah.
Pretty gutsy.
And something grabbed it on the other side of the bed.
Okay. And then?
My fright level went through the roof. But I got to thinking just a second that maybe this is something good, a good spirit. I'm a God-fearing man, and I believe in the Bible and the stuff and things it says, and I thought maybe it was a messenger from God. And
Lawrence, how old are you?
49.
49. Are you working or?
I'm currently disabled.
You're disabled. All right. And you obviously have some independent means, I guess, property, money left to you by relatives, that kind of thing. So you're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So then what? I mean, what next? And where did this go? 3 years is a long time.
Yeah. Well. I asked it, I thought maybe it was good. I said, if you're good, touch my hand. And it grabbed me by the arm. I said, if you're good, touch my hand. And it grabbed me by the arm again. Slid right down my wrist and stopped. I said, well, if you're definitely bad, hit me on the hand. And he hit me on the hand 3 times.
He hit you on the hand?
3 times.
I say he, who the heck knows if it's a he, or maybe you do.
Well, it, and, you know, it covered everything, but I nicknamed it Taz. After a while, it,
Taz, you called the ghost Taz?
Yeah, because it would make, got so if he did anything that didn't like it, make grumbling noises like that little cartoon character the kids watches.
Grumbling noises?
Yeah. Sort of modeled to where you couldn't understand. It sounded like it might have been either Indian or Latin or something, but it wasn't English.
Oh, I see. Okay, not English.
Not English. And I, by trial and error, went along for a while, a trial and error during the lightning storm, I realized it was giving me fits all night long and trying to yank me out of bed and pulling my hair and all kind of crazy stuff.
What now? Yanked you off the bed?
Yeah, they actually kicked or done something to the bed, threw me in the mattress both halfway off once.
Good Lord.
But now,
a lot of people, obviously, you know, Lawrence, are going to say, this guy's crackers. That's going to be some of the reaction out there in the audience. And that's why I had your friend come on tonight, the fellow who contacted me, Sonny. Let's break the story for a second. Sonny?
Yes.
you know Lawrence is telling the truth, don't you?
Well, yes, now. I was out there with the Cracker people, maybe. We traveled together for a while, and he kept talking about it and everything, and I hadn't had any experience, and then I did.
What happened?
Well, we had taken the 98 summer to ride bikes on Sundays, and I had recently went up to a flea market up at Elkins and bought a nice leather hat, and I never took it off except to eat and everything. It was my favorite hat. But I went down there on a Sunday evening, and he had the family in, and I just was speaking with him this afternoon, and he said, well, that was a family reunion going on, and that was the aftermath of it. I went into the house because I didn't go to his house. In all the summer, I did not go to his house because of that, and I'm a God-fearing man. I went down there, and he had some people down there, and he'll tell you the story about it, but a person I hadn't seen for a long time, Kenny and his wife, since high school.
Right.
So I left the house, and a couple days later I went, what the heck did I do with that hat? And I left it down there. Now, that might be a mundane thing for some at all. You just bought a hat, you've left it there. But something drew me to the house that evening. I don't know why. Left the hat. So the following Saturday I called, and his mother answered the phone, and I asked her about this thing. She said, well, something really did happen that Sunday night, really terrible. And I said, well, I need my hat. I said, you ever had any experiences about this, his mother, Orpha? And she had. And she said it went into her legs and done some other things to the grandchildren and everything. And so I got kind of nervous, and I went down to the preacher down here and had a couple crosses anointed and carried one in my pocket and left one on top of the bed just to be safe. Maybe that's overly safe, but, you know, if you believe in one spirit, you got to believe in good and bad.
You do what you believe.
Yeah, you can't.
I have no problem with that. So you armed yourself.
I armed myself. I went back, got my hat. That was the first experience that I figured out later that had to do something, because they can play mind games. And I found that out.
Did you ever observe any of the goings-on of the sort that Lawrence is telling us about?
Well, he showed me two nights of videos in one night, if you understand that. He showed me two videotapes of a lengthy time when he was retiring.
Yes.
And he showed me the first one was, and these are at length, and they're very boring. I hate to say this, Lawrence, but they're very boring.
Well, he was probably videotaping himself in bed.
Yes, he was.
That's pretty boring to watch that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the first one, I watched the bed move up and down, and I said, hey, that's the autofocus doing that. Trouble was, the only portion of the bed would move slowly up and down, and nothing was causing the focus to move. Nothing else you could. Usually you can hear the mechanical part of the camera doing that.
Of course.
And it wasn't. So the next film...
Well, moreover, more importantly, if the only part of the picture that was moving was the bed up and down, not the whole picture...
Right.
Then you've got a legitimate shot.
Right. The next one that he showed me was, you had to look very closely, but the thing was moving over across him and he was talking.
Wait a minute. The entity was
moving... Well, whatever you call it, because it was fuzzy on the film. Moving across... And this man is, I've known him for a long time.
What do you mean by fuzzy? You mean like sort of...
It made the bed out of focus where it was moving.
Where it was moving, oh,
yeah,
really?
Like the size of about triple the size of a basketball.
Lawrence, you didn't tell me you had videotape evidence.
Well, I hadn't got that far yet.
I see. When you watched all this, Sonny, how did you react?
Well, by the end of it, of course I was surprised, but I was also very tired. So it took a while to kick it in. So the next week when we went riding, we discussed it at a place we stopped to dine. And it spooked me out.
Huh.
Well, but the second time was most recently, probably about 2 months ago. I was down there, and we was watching something. I don't know. I like science fiction. I like action movies, and we was watching something. And I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, in my right nostril, I jumped up, and Lawrence said, "What's wrong?" And I was trying to remove something from my nose, And I know that sounds gross, but do you know those worms? I guess, I don't know if they're in the western United States or not. They call them a woolly worm. I don't know the scientific name for them, but they often have black on them and different stripes of brown, and they, some people say you can tell the length of the season.
Are you talking about these worms with all little tiny legs or with no legs at all?
Well, they're a very spiny fur on them, and when you hold them, they curl up.
Oh, God, yes, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, anyway, and that's what it felt like was in my right nostril immediately. Didn't crawl up there or anything, just immediately was there. And my eyes were watering. I made it to the bathroom, and I tried to remove this thing by every means which you can feel imaginable, and I sounded awful in there and everything. And so I just excused myself, and I left because I was told not to entertain or identify anything like that if it was evil. Just don't talk to it, just leave. So I left. That was about 2 months ago. And only about 2 weeks ago, I was sitting, we was playing cards, and my girlfriend John was there, and I smoke a cigar, and on occasion, cigars can burn your eyes.
Yeah.
Well, in a certain way, they burn your eyes. But they don't feel like a pin pricking right straight into your eye.
No, no, no.
And this is what happened to my left eye first, and within a matter of seconds, my left eye, then my right eye, and it hurt at that time when it felt like it pricked my eye.
Like somebody was putting a pin in.
Yes, and then it just quit. You know, it wasn't something that stayed there because everybody has pains in their eyes on occasion.
Yeah.
And this wasn't the normal thing, but that was the third occasion, and I don't know, and I still wouldn't identify it. And only last week, my girlfriend, John, she wanted to leave early. She got spooked, so we left early. And I don't know, but...
Sounds like Lawrence has lost just about everybody close to him in his life over this thing. Is that...
Well, there might... I kept trying to find out about a professor, a woman... that was a professor up here at West Virginia University that had died after a time that I think I might have a story wrong, but these people that were there that Sunday that I left my hat.
Yes?
He'll have to tell you a story because I don't want to tell it second-handed.
All right. So I hope you understand the reason I wanted to bring you on, Sonny, was so that the people understood what Lawrence is saying is known to be true by more than just Lawrence. Because, you know, incredible stories and incredible proof and all that sort of thing. And you guys are eyewitnesses. So what you have said and what you have done for Lawrence as he continues the story is very important, Sonny. Do you have more you want to add, or is that about it? And should I go to Lawrence?
You should go to Lawrence at this time because he's got some amazing things.
All right. Sonny, thank you. Thank you very much on behalf of Sonny and myself. Lawrence and myself, and we'll be back with Lawrence. So, Sonny, thank you.
All right. Thank
you. Good night. And Lawrence, you stay on the line. We'll be right back. 3 years. I don't know if I'd stay in that for 3 years. How about you?
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memory stored, and to use them to help us to fight.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 17th of February 2000.
And Lawrence Knotts in West Virginia, who lives now alone in a home where he's lost everything because of an entity, because of a ghost, because of I don't know what it is. But I am sufficiently convinced that his friend examined physical evidence that obviously we're going to ask for a copy of, you can bet. And we're going to now hear the rest of the story from Lawrence, or in a moment, so stay right there. Back now to my guest, Lawrence in West Virginia. Okay, Lawrence, we're back on the air again.
Okay.
All right. I didn't know you had videotapes, Lawrence. Is there a way we can get copies of those?
Well, probably. I don't have nothing to copy them off with myself, but...
Okay, maybe you can work it out with Sonny or somebody else, because,
yeah,
you know, obviously we'd love to have copies. This is real important stuff. Now, for you, I guess a horror, you lost your mom, she left, your fiancé, you said, left. That's a horror in itself. Tell me something, Lawrence, why haven't you left?
Well, I lived here for 28 years, and I built the place up myself. And
oh, you built the house?
Yeah. If this had happened to me someplace else, I'd have been gone before the sun rose.
Yeah, I hear that.
But when you're at home and you're used to having a home and raised to the home's important, it just seemed like not an option to give up on my home. Most people said they ought to leave and stuff, but
So you've talked to a lot of people about this.
Yes, I have.
What are the things? I mean, your mom, for goodness sake, what specifically do you think scared her so much she finally left? I mean, why?
Well, I'd experienced it being them things that didn't like light, because during a lightning storm, lightning flash, they'd let loose of you and go under the bed and raise the bed up and down. So
not just your bed, but your mom's too?
Well, it didn't get to her for a while. When it did, she was out of here the next day.
See, that'd be me too, Lawrence. I mean, I'm sure you're a great child and your mother loves you, but when my bed went into the air, I'd be out the door.
Well, this thing had the capabilities of inflicting pain on you, like feel like a Charlie horse in your leg.
Yes.
And I found out what it's been doing to me, and I told my mother how to break it if it got a hold of you, to shine a bright flashlight over it, and it couldn't take it. And it released its hold on you. So I told her, and she thought it was, she kept her bright flashlight in the bed with her, and one night it did, and she had to use the flashlight, so it felt like it was going to tear all the bones out of her leg, and she shined the flashlight on it, and it backed off, which that's a pattern I've been using on, using bright light against it, to try to fight the thing with, because there ain't a whole lot you can do to a monkey from hell like that to discourage it.
And that's when she left.
Yeah, she the next day she packed up and moved out. She was the last one.
The last one. So then even before that, you said, was it your fiancé?
Yeah, it had messed with her. And
this gal was living with in the house with you as your...
Well, she was living here beside me, and she was over here a lot of the time, but
right.
That thing messed with her. She moved out.
What did she say to you? I mean, with her, was it the same thing? I mean, was it rocking her bed? What?
Well, it was...
Or your bed, collectively.
Well, main thing it was doing to her was causing her pain in different parts of her body. When I wasn't in the room or something, or even if I was in the room, she'd say, "Ouch, quit pinching me." And I said, "I ain't pinching you." She said, "Well, sure, something got a hold of me." And a few rounds of that, she went to another territory. She said she might come back and see me someday during daylight hours, but she wasn't going to let the sunset on her here again.
Not in the darkness.
Not in the dark, because them things was really active in the darkness. I'll tell you, I've finally got rid of one, and I got a girl that exercised it out in the house.
One. So you now believe there are, what, more? There's more than one?
There was two sent back to replace it. She told me that she had been learning this exorcism and said, "Now I got to warn you that you may get two back in place of one. If I do defeat it and get it out of here, there'll be some more sent to be, could be some more sent to replace it." Said, "I don't know." Said, only time will tell.
So she came, she did an exorcism, that spirit left, and two more arrived.
Yes, it did. And when they arrived very violently.
How so?
All the doors started opening, slamming in the house, and doors started moving. Furniture was moving around, and I tried to go to bed, and the mirrors were shaking, rattling on the walls. The walls were rattling, and I tried to go to bed. It just felt like a pack of dogs jumped on me and started biting me.
Holy smokes, Lawrence. And you were using you tried to use a light?
I used the flashlight. It just back off us. I hooked up a 750,000 candle power spotlight for open air or open country spotting, and I hooked that up to bed, and I used it. It had a lot of power, and I tip it over back and forth in the room, and and they would back off. But as soon as I dropped the light off of them, they'd start again. So
then. How, Lawrence, do you sleep at night?
Well,
in other words, it's like they're waiting for you, and you can hold them off, but if you go to sleep, you're not holding them off, right?
Well, right. They, if they want to give you problems, I've found things that discourage them. At the present, I have two, party strobes. You know, you've seen a strobe light for parties?
You bet.
I've got one of them on each side of the bed that I turn on when I go to bed. And I put a blindfold on so I can sleep. And those things does not like that strobe light, so that maybe 5 or 10 minutes is all they'll be there. But one comes from between 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock.
In the morning?
In the morning, yeah. And the other one, she usually shows up about 10 o'clock, and he's the one that likes to poke you in the eyes so you can't even watch television.
Actually physically poking you in the eyes.
Yeah.
Kind of like Sonny described happened to him when he...
That's a regular occasion for me.
Regular to be poked in the eyes.
Yeah, that's a virtually every night thing.
Every night.
And they raised my bed up and down, and the new thing that they started recently was scratching the bed.
Scratching the bed you're on.
Yeah, scratching it and then scratching the wall beside of it. That's I got pretty good nerves around them, but
Lawrence,
that frightens me.
Yeah. Have they ever left physical evidence of what they've done, other than what you have on videotape, which is really something? You're to be commended for doing it. What drove you, by the way, to finally do that, to set up videotape?
Well, everyone that talked to, well, not everyone, but the majority of people I talked to thought I was losing my mind.
I need
my medicine changed. And
this is not a this is not a rude question, but did you ever ask yourself the same question any time during all this?
Yeah, but when I started messing with other people, doing things to my daughters and stuff, and one girl wasn't no relative to us here, was here one night. She ran her mouth about, I told her, this thing. That's when Taz was still here, before he'd been cast out. And I said, Taz is up and about, and he always pulled the hair above my right ear when he wanted me to know he was around. And I'd went out of state and stuff, and when the sun went down, Taz would pull my hair. I tried three different states. And
pulling your hair?
Yeah, he'd pull my hair above my right ear to let me know he was there. That was his trademark before he'd start any of his stuff. But the thing of it is, they've got so much static electricity that I took a compass. That girl took the one out of here, said that there's a possibility I might, since there's much activity here, that she wouldn't come back and work on it anymore because she said it caused her problems. But
you took a compass in there, like an electromagnetic compass?
Yeah, and she said to check out the house and round through the yard and see if there's a portal to hell around. Said they're magnetic. I said, well, can't hurt nothing. So I took it and checked down through the yard and around the house and through the house, and it continued to point due north. But when I went to nights when I went to bed, I decided to take it with me and just watch it and see if I could tell anything. And sure enough, I could hear something coming down the hall, beating the hall wall. And when it got to my door, just as soon as it stepped into my door, that needle on that compass pointed towards that door.
Directly at the door?
Yeah. And as the thing come around the bed, it started shaking the left side of the bed and messing with the bed and coming up towards me. That needle followed it just like it just located it. Just like it was pointing to north, only it ignored north and went to that thing. And it had so much energy that the hair, especially Taz, the hair will stand up on you and point towards them. You can feel them when they get close to you. Your hair is like, just like static electricity. It'll just draw you. You can feel, you can look at your hair and it'll be pointing in that direction.
Good heavens to Betsy. So the compass would indicate to you the direction the entity was moving, and there was so much static electricity, you're calling it, just your hair pulled just like the compass indicated.
Yeah. And it has tremendous power. The one night, there was something come in there, a guy told me he had a ghost problem, and he had a dog, but a couple of dogs were chased him until they got him out of the house, and he got along all right. So I got bought one of his dogs and put that in there, and it actually would chase the entities around through the house when they'd come to the bed in there to mess
really,
with it.
Really, really.
But eventually, it helped me get
did the
rest
entity,
there for a while, but it eventually got run over with the car.
The dog did?
Yeah.
I was about to ask, Lawrence, when the dog chased the entity, did the entity run from it or move from it?
The first ones there did. But there was something came in once there. I called it, my buddy last, but I called it the boss bugger. And it came into the room, and the dog was on the bed a-barking, because the dog could hear him, and the dog would go off and rip up and down through the hallway, snapping, cracking his teeth at him. But anyway, this one night, there was something with a lot of power came there, because I had the ceiling fan on, and the dog laying on the foot of the bed with me, and I heard something in the hallway, cracking and beating around, and the dog raised up and started to barking.
Yeah.
Then the ear just died in there. I had the ceiling fan on, and I looked at the dog, and his mouth was working, but there wasn't nothing coming out. It was the ear had just died. Something had so much power it killed the ear. I couldn't hear the dog barking, and I couldn't hear the ceiling fan going.
So, in other words, this dog was obviously barking, because that's what dogs do when they open their mouth, but there was no sound coming out.
Right. You couldn't hear no sound. And that really creeped me up. I grabbed my spotlight and kept it going. My arms got tired, and I kept switching arms to if I can finally left. But then before it left, the dog, I coaxed the dog backed up towards me, towards my head, and I finally coaxed him into going after it and towed him over that way and told him to get it. And that thing grabbed the dog and threw it down the hallway.
Threw the dog down the hall.
Threw the dog down the hallway, and he went and got under the couch. He wouldn't come back out.
I understand how the dog feels or felt. You say your dog was killed by a car.
Yes.
You think this entity had anything to do with that?
Very doubtful.
So you think it just might have been a coincidence?
Yeah, I think that was a coincidence. Their main gig is to distress you till you can't sleep. During the day, they don't mess with you. And whenever you try to lay down and get some rest of a night, that's when they start their problems. And I've got so I don't go to bed until 3 o'clock, until after their monkey business is over with, and then I sleep from then the next day. It's got my life turned to half a turn out of on the clock.
Boy, Lawrence, I don't know if I could I could go through what you're going through. It's still happening. Does it happen every day, every other day, once a week?
Yeah, no, it happens every night.
Every night?
Every night. Well, recently, I think last week it skipped one night, and maybe it was two nights last week it skipped, but that's the first time it skipped since this stuff started 3 years ago. So.
Probably, doesn't make much difference to you because you've got to assume it's there if it's there every other night.
Yeah, so even when you don't get to shaking the bed, that thing can actually read your thoughts. Now, the Bible says, guard well your thoughts because even your thoughts is heard in heaven. So I thought that was a little bit extreme, but that thing I can think if I'm laying in the bed and I want to know if it's around when I first lay down or something, if it's still there, all I have to do is just think, monkey, don't you shake the bed, and that bed will start up and down. I don't have to say nothing. All I have to do is just think it, and that thing can hear your thoughts just like if they was, just as if you was talking out loud.
Lawrence, this is an important question. Have you given any consideration to whether this entity might just, I'm just asking this, Lawrence, might be you?
Well, you mean, it and me is two different things.
In other words, I guess, you know, telepathy, you might be, saying, go ahead, mentally, shake the bed, and it shakes the bed. But doesn't that leave open slightly the possibility that this power is coming, emanating from you?
Well, it sounds like it might, but I really don't think that it is because I found one thing that... two things that works on it.
Okay, Lawrence, I'm going to have to hold you over. Can you stay on the air with me?
Yeah, okay.
All right, then. We're going to delay our coming up guests, and we'll keep Lawrence on for a while. What you're hearing is obviously a real ghost story that's happening now in West Virginia, and we'll get more of it when we get back in a moment.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up.
No, 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 no.
we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Good morning, everybody. We're in the middle of a ghost story, a real one. My guest is Lawrence Knotts. He's in West Virginia. He's disabled. He built the house that he lives in. He recently, actually 3 years ago now, allowed a timber company to come in and cut the timber on his land he owns, but land which was Native American land, apparently, at one time. And immediately following that, he began to get haunted. And when I say haunted, I mean what he's had to say has been incredible. He would lay his arm off the bed, and something unseen would grab it, like another arm or hand grabbing you, grab hold of him. He tried it again. It happened again. I just can't encapsulate the entire thing, but it happened to his mother. She took off. It happened to his fiancée. She took off. I had Sonny Nestor in West Virginia, who's a friend of Lawrence's, on the air last hour, and he verified what Lawrence is telling me. Lawrence has had his eyes gouged, like people sticking pins in your eyes. He's had his bed rise up off the floor. He's got videotapes of all of this. So, why is Lawrence there? Well, Lawrence built his house. It's his house. He's not going to leave. He had an exorcism performed. One spirit left the home, but two came back. Light seems to affect them. He's rigged up strobe lights. He's got flashlights. He had his mother using flashlights and his fiance, and finally they, excuse the expression, gave up the ghost and left. So, we'll go back to Lawrence in West Virginia in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 17th of February, 2000.
These now entities, two of them, are able to be tracked in two ways. Lawrence has had a compass, and as these entities move about the room, the compass follows them. His dog, until the dog was killed, would chase these entities. The compass would follow them around the room, and the compass would just move around. His hair would stand up, moving in the direction of the entities. It's just an amazing story. This man is living with all of this right now. Lawrence, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. You had something you wanted to continue with when we broke at the hour.
Yeah, you'd asked me a question there. Thought maybe it might be a mind thing. Well.
Yeah, your mind, because yeah. You said you could suggest to it with your mind to mentally shake the bed, and the bed would start shaking.
Yeah, well, the thing that was messed with other people, and when the exorcist came here that I invited, she had no trouble finding it in the house. She could tell where it was at. The air would get real cold wherever it was at. If you got close to it, the air was real cold.
So that happens too.
Yeah, and it's, you can't see it, but if it wants you to know it's there, it will start harassing you, and it's up to you. Recognize it, or
so. With the exception of a couple of days, or every now and then, this has been happening to you every night for 3 years.
Correct.
Ever since you cut that wood.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. It started before actually the timber cutting was done. It started the week that I sold the timber off of it.
Oh, you mean when you signed the contract to have the timber cut?
Right. That's the week it started. And
you're pretty sure that was Native American land previous to your ownership?
Yeah, I was told there's Indian graves there, and you can see where they're at. The people that owned it back two or three generations ago.
So in other words, it's not just Indian land. There's Indian, it's Indian burial ground.
Yeah, They showed my family, showed me where the, my uncle did, and I heard off of where the grave, Indian graveyard was. And his, back at his recollection, they was, the people that owned the land, he bought it off of some other people that owned the land, a couple of generations down, but them guys, there was some boys in that family, and they went and dug them Indian graves up. And they was, about four out of six of them died in a mental institution.
Four of the six who dug these graves up on that land?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel, Lawrence.
So,
how old are you, Lawrence?
I'm 49.
49. During any of this, Lawrence, did you worry that you might get killed?
Well, yes, it was frightful. After Todd Barker, I sort of tried to laugh it off, and he said, don't take this as a joke. He said, these things, when they show up, he said, there's more showed up in the United States this year than ever before, but he said, when they get tired playing mind games with you, he said, they'll kill you. He said, it's not unusual to have several people killed where these things is at. And that gave me a new outlook on things, and I said, well, what can I do to save myself? He said, I can't guarantee you nothing, but wear a cross. He said, everybody that messes with demon ghosts wears crosses. And he said, I can't guarantee you it'll keep you alive, but he said, that's my best advice to you.
This is Clive Barker saying this?
Yeah.
All right, you're a religious man, Lawrence, aren't you?
Yeah, right.
What kind of background?
Oh, was Brethren, and I switched over to Pentecostal.
Pentecostal?
Yeah.
There's a lot of Pentecostals in the West Virginia area, huh?
Right.
So, what about your church? You must have gone to them. You must have gone to your church.
Yeah, I did. That's the first place I went. I talked to my minister, and asked if he had any experience with ghosts, and he said no. I said, well, how about studying up on it, because I think I've got one down here for sure, and I'm going to need help to get it out of there. I thought maybe a simple exorcism would do the job. I had no idea how much problem I was going to have. I thought maybe the preacher came and prayed over the house, prayed through the house and what have you, and ordered it out of there, it would stay out, but that was to no avail.
Have these entities spoken to you?
They make a noise, it sounds like a television or a radio on another room, and if you go to that room, it'll sound like the room you come out of, but I have had them get on each side of the bed and communicate back and forth with each other. From both sides of the bed.
Never anything directly said to you, though, that you understood, as in English?
No, it's just a mottled sound. It just sounds like something at the radio that you can't completely hear the words to. You can hear the tone, voice tone, but you can't hear the detail of the...
Lawrence, this is such an amazing story. Do you want to tell us what town you're in there in West Virginia?
Well, my address is most...
No, give me your address. Just tell me what town you're in.
Motesville.
How do you spell that?
M-O-A-T-S-V-I-L-L-E.
Do it again slowly, please. M as in Mary.
Yeah.
O.
O-A-T-S-V-I-L-L-E.
Motesville, West Virginia. All right. Small town.
Yeah, community.
And you live kind of in a rural area, woods all around you, timber all around you, that kind of thing, huh?
Correct.
How much land do you own there?
What my house plot's on, about 8 acres, but I own about 75 up on my home place that I inherited. And that's where the graveyard's at.
And that's where the graveyard is, and that's where the timber was cut, right?
Yeah, I was pretty sure that they had something to do with it, and I was out there deer hunting, and something felt like something slapped me. I didn't see nothing there.
Slapped you.
And I said, hey, has this got anything to do with my ghost problem? Slapped me again. And I was looking down there where the graveyard was at, and the timber cutters had cut a lot of trees into it.
Uh-huh.
And really trashed it up. And I said, do you want that graveyard cleaned up? And that thing slapped me twice right real quick, and I said, well, I can understand that. So I took 17 truckloads of firewood out of that graveyard, took all the brush out of it, and planted pine trees around, made it look real nice, and put up a permanent stainless steel sign.
You did?
Marking it as a graveyard.
You did?
Graveyard.
When did you do this? How long ago?
That was last winter. I finished it last winter.
Last winter. And still it happens to you?
Yeah, I was fairly certain that it would go away whenever I got that graveyard cleaned up. But it didn't. It didn't.
All right, what's the worst of what's happened to you? Eyes are gouged like needles being pushed into your eyes. You said your bed, you've got videotape of it coming up off the ground, moving. You've got videotape of this entity, which is not quite visible, but you could sort of see the fuzz, you said, on the videotape where it was moving. Is that right?
Like a mirage.
Like a mirage.
It's how heat mirage dance and stuff. You can't get a detail on the focus of it.
Sure.
Everything else in the room was in perfect focus, but where that thing was at, the picture, the camera recorder couldn't take no picture of details where it was at.
And is that essentially the same thing that you see with your eyes when you see it, or do you see more?
I don't see it.
Oh, you don't see it at all?
No.
You just feel it?
You just feel it. Even the Bible says that you can't see the spirit, just the results of it. So I've never been able to see anything, not even a shadow or anything.
Has it done any permanent physical harm to you?
Well, the most thing it's done is probably scared 10 years off of my life.
Scared 10 years off your life.
Because that is a frightening experience.
But even though, you know, this is your house, you built it, I understand that, but at the time your mom leaves, at the time your fiancé leaves, by then, your life's kind of falling apart around you over this thing. And it must take an awful lot of will or stubbornness, I don't know which you are, willful or stubborn or both, to stay there, and I don't know what you're trying to do now, make peace with it? Fight it out? What?
Basically, I'm trying to outlast it. I'm in hopes that it'll get tired and go away. I've been hoping that for quite a while, but I found something recently, in all honesty, that has helped me survive with it.
And that is what?
I found that if it comes into the room, messes with the bed, if I start praising the Lord, it can't hurt me or nothing. It can't punch and gouge on me. It'll shake the bed, but it can't touch me as long as I'm praising the Lord.
Has it left marks on you before?
Yeah. Not real heavy ones, but just prints and stuff. Like, where it's like where it grabbed you, and if you know how you squeeze something real hard, then it'll leave red marks.
Yes.
I've had red marks and stuff left on me. And, to be honest with you, I got some nerve pills. Help me deal with it.
You got some nerve pills?
It really stresses your nerves to deal with something like that.
Did you go to the doctor about this?
Yeah.
What did he say, Lawrence?
Basically, he said, listen, tell me, well, the doctor's a woman, but,
okay.
She said, she said, I can give you something to help relieve the stress in your life. So I can give you medicine for that, but as far as medicine for that ghost problem you've got, they don't make nothing for that. But she said I can give you some stress relieving pills, so that helps my nerve and it helps keep me from getting my nerve shot so bad that my nervous system overloads or anything. Because I've come to the conclusion, too, that through time and experience, it's, I just can't get no sleep before 3 o'clock. I just...
Yeah, he stays awake with lights, folks. We had some people join at the top of this last hour with lights, which will kind of keep these things at bay, but they're not gone. They're just waiting.
Right.
And if he allows darkness to occur, they start in on him. Now, I'll tell you something, Lawrence. I was talking to my wife, who knows something about this sort of thing. And she said, you're going to have to make peace with these Native Americans, with the spirits, somehow. She suggested that you do a planting there as a gesture, you know, plant trees, I don't know, trees, something.
I did that around the graveyard.
That's what I've just heard this last half hour, and so I'm a little bit unsure. I'm unsure of what to tell you to do. I think I would like to see those videotapes. You know, to a lot of people, Lawrence, what you have on those tapes is evidence of either the survival of spirit after death, or maybe of evil personified in some sort of spirit. You know, I don't know how to put it, but in other words, you have very, very, very important evidence in the eyewitness testimony of your friend.
I'm sure of one thing. If you wondered whether the Bible was right or not, when something like that comes to messing with you, you won't have any trouble believing what the Bible tells you.
All right, my friend, listen, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give your number to somebody who can perhaps help you with your permission. I'll do that, all right?
Okay.
And you see about getting, don't ever send me the original, but send me a copy of those videotapes, all right?
Okay, you have to pay attention to particular things on to get to know what it is and when it's coming up and stuff. Because,
that's fine. I can. Your friend said it was mostly boring until it happened. So
yeah.
Yeah. You kind of outlined for me where on the videotape to look for it. All right.
Okay.
Okay, Lawrence. We'll be in touch, and we're going to have someone call you. Thanks.
Okay then.
Okay. Good night.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Tell just like an old time movie about a ghost from a wishing well in a castle dark or a fortress strong with chains upon my feet. You know that ghost is me, and I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost. You can't see. If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind the drugstore sells. When you reach the part where the heartaches come, the hero would be me.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
If you've been with us over the last hour and a half, you've heard a hell of a story of a haunting in West Virginia. You know, normally I'm so interested in this sort of thing that I would have offered to get on an airplane and go experience it. But what's going on there sounds so awful that I wouldn't do that. Despite curiosity, I'm not that curious. And what this man is going through, this hell this man is going through, I don't know what to say, but maybe one of my guests coming up a little late does. And late gracefully, because I wanted to get Lawrence's entire story out. And so Dr. Katya Romanoff, we'll call her Dr. Katya, holds a PhD in parapsychology, metaphysics, and world religion. So she, along with Lori, who would normally be here talking about dreams, and yes, we'll get to that, but since she's got a PhD in parapsychology, why, obviously, she no doubt is going to have something to say about what you just heard over the last hour and a half, appropriately so. So I think that's the way we'll open up with the ladies in a moment. That's coming up next. Well, all right. We're going to move forward now. That was some one hell of an hour and a half, I would say. I'm talking to a number of people about this man's situation, and I'm going to have somebody call him specifically who may be able to help out, Evelyn Paglini, and she's in touch with us and maybe by now with him as well. But that's some story. I don't know that I would stay there. I could have stayed there. On the other hand, I don't know what you do. You build your own house. You have a lot of land there. You inherited the land. And you don't want to leave. Anyway, fortunately, we've got coming up Dr. Katya and Lori, who ostensibly were here originally to talk about dreams, and we'll get to that because there's some pretty weird stuff going on now in my life that I want to ask about. Actually, that's why I called them, and we set the show up. But they heard at least the last 30 minutes of the last hour and a half. And Dr. Katya, welcome to the program.
Hi, Art.
Hi. Good.
That was scary.
Yep. Lori, are you there?
I'm here.
You're there. Okay. Obviously, I want to get both of your impressions, but Dr. Katya, because you specialize in areas like this, just give me your impressions of what you heard and what you think and what this man might do.
I've dealt with possessions, a few in my time, and exorcisms, only a few, but enough to be somewhat comfortable with the concept. But that scared me. I mean, I had goosebumps. That was frightening. He was obviously under acute psychological distress from this. And, of course, a depth psychologist would say it's his subconscious, he's projecting, blah, blah, blah. But as a parapsychologist, I do believe that these entities exist. My advice to him...
Listen, I asked him about that, but you've got to bear in mind, in the first hour, that which you didn't hear was... A friend of his that lives a few miles away, they've known each other since, early school days. His friend sent me the email. I brought his friend on the air. His friend saw this stuff happen.
Wow.
It even happened to his friend.
See, he's got a witness. Like you said, it should be documented.
He's got videotape, too.
Jeez.
It sounds not so simple. Originally, I thought, just because he signed a contract to have the timber on the Native American land cut, that was a problem. And he said the problem started when he signed the contract.
Right, I heard that.
But it's a lot worse than that, apparently, because it's burial ground, and
yeah.
He said kids dug up Native American bodies. So, oh man, how do you get out of this one?
Yeah, his... my advice to him, and I get this from my half-brother was listening to the program with me, and he's got Native American blood in him. He said he needs to get a shaman, a Native American medicine man, to make peace with these entities, to offer a bridge. So the red man doesn't trust the white man for obvious reasons, and a shaman could provide a bridge. He's trying to deal with it in the only frame he has, which is Christianity, and that's a very valid frame of reference, but it's not enough. He needs to deal with them on their own terms and make peace.
When something as serious as grave robbing occurs,
yeah, that's just
it's
sacrilege. It's iconoclasm. It's a desecration. You know, that's holy ground, and it's been disturbed. So these entities are all stirred up. There have been studies. We would call this perhaps morphogenetic mind forms. There is no way, the laws of thermonuclear dynamics, there's no way to get rid of something. So for those who are out there who are skeptics and don't believe in ghosts and spirits, just think, there's nowhere to go for our thought processes, for our personalities, for our minds. So they can center and cluster around a sacred site like this, especially one that has the negative connotation of being disturbed.
I'm curious, either one of you, why you think a dead spirit, I had some guests on last night who wouldn't agree there's any such thing as a dead spirit.
Right.
Oh, did you hear last night's show?
Yes, I heard parts of it.
Oh, okay, all right.
The word dead spirit are almost an oxymoron because spirit is immortal.
To my guest last night, these things would have been demons.
Yes.
He would say they're demons. Now, what do you really think they are? Demons, actually the spirits of the Native Americans that were buried there? What is this man encountering?
Native Americans who have passed on have been disturbed and have unfinished business, and so they have not been stirred up into the ether, the gene pool mixed in and reborn. They are still a cluster of their original life form, their thoughts, their whole spirit, that almost as though it were still living in the flesh, but it isn't. It's not a demon. Demons and angels are terms that we assign through the centuries as we grapple with these unseen entities, these clusters of living people that are still left behind even though they die. They have unfinished business.
All right.
So they're not going to fade away.
All right. This man said compasses would follow them around the room. The dog would chase them. The room would get cold. These things would lift his bed off the floor, bouncing it back and forth, grab him, gouge his eyes.
Right. See, these are all like electromagnetic disturbances. They can be measured. Just like the radio waves are invisible, but they're in your room right now helping you listen to the program.
Obviously.
These same invisible things are out there. It's very frightening. It's one of those good campfire stories to scare you.
Well, you know what this whole situation reminds me of? The Winchester House.
My wife mentioned that. You want to explain to people about Winchester? Now, Winchester was a man who manufactured firearms, hence the name Winchester Rifle, right?
Yes.
What's the deal behind that?
Well, after he died, his wife was, if I'm correct, she was being tormented by spirits, and she visited a medium who told her it was the spirits of all the people who had been killed by the rifles her husband manufactured.
A lot of them Native Americans, no doubt.
Unbelievable.
Of course.
What year was this that Mrs. Winchester began to experience this? Do you know offhand, roughly?
I'm thinking after the Civil War.
After the Civil War.
I could be wrong, but I think it was around that time. And so to keep these spirits at bay, she began building this house with the money that was made from the Winchester Rifle Company.
Right.
And she just continued to build and build and build this house with stairs that led nowhere, doorways that would open into nothing.
What was the
for
idea?
The rest of her life.
What was the idea? Why was she why doorways and to nowhere, halls to nowhere?
She confused the spirits.
She was trying to baffle them?
And she was hoping this would confuse the spirits.
This is a true story. My wife told me this story during the last break, and I thought, boy, does this apply? And you just brought it up, and this went on until...
Until she died.
Until she died.
Mm-hmm. You
does
can go
this,
visit the house today.
It still exists.
Yes.
Where
it's
is it?
It's in San Francisco.
San Francisco.
Wow.
Then I mean, what do you say to this man? If she experienced this until the day she died, this is a 49-year-old man that we just talked to, you know, a disabled man who owns a lot of property, built his own house. He actually built the house with his own hands. His mother's been run out. His fiance has been run out. His life has been ruined, and he won't leave. So then what?
There's only two options. He's got to make peace with it or go. If he continues this conflict, he's not going to get anywhere. That's the problem. Our two cultures, the white man, the Native American, has been in conflict for, 300 years now, and it's still not going away. So if he can somehow show them that he's a white man to be trusted, they could rest in peace. So see, they're not resting. They're not resting at all. They're making his life miserable. They're very active.
All right. How sure are you about this, Doctor? The men I had last night would say this is absolute bunk.
Right.
There's no such thing, because when we die, it's death. Good night, baby. Maybe there is another side. Certainly they believe with the Lord in heaven, I guess. But you're dead, you're dead. That's their very fundamentalist view, and they expressed it. They were very articulate, but they strongly hold that view, and you strongly, obviously, disagree.
No, there's just too much evidence of an unseen world, another realm overlapping our own, of which we move within, that disproves, I think, this narrow view that all we are is what we see. Science has proven that there is so much more that we don't see. Why put blinders on and ignore that when dealing with it and grappling with it will bring you peace? The goal is, and the goal of any religion should be, to end human suffering. So you look and see how it works. Even Jesus of Galilee said, you'll know them by their fruits if it works. So if it brings peace, an exorcism or dealing with these, making peace, if it ends human suffering, that's your result.
Okay, you may not have heard this, but he brought somebody, I guess, at the advice of the church,
yes,
or from the church, who exercised one spirit, mm-hmm. and then he got two spirits.
Right. The exorcism must not have been as effective as it needed to be. Again, I really think he needs the assistance, perhaps a Christian exorcist working with a Native American shaman. They need to bring together those two cultures and as a communication bridge to those very unrestful spirits. I live on timbered land. I live on 20 acres of timbered land.
Yes.
He needs to replant. It's not that difficult to replant. And
well, you heard him say he took a truck in there, really cleaned the whole mess up that he admitted it was a big mess, cleaned it up, and put
That's
a memorial
him.
Up there. Saying it was a burial ground, the whole thing.
That must not have been enough to appease them, though.
Yeah, obviously not. So you think replanting?
Definitely. Bringing it is back. The problem is all things change, and unfortunately whole cultures get lost during these changes, like Tibet. Tibet's just about gone, and the Native American culture is gone. Despite the pockets on reservations, all we have is their wisdom recorded. So there's no way to return entirely to the way things were,
but he can attempt as sort of a peace offering.
Is a ghost like that a full consciousness, do you believe? I'm asking you about the nature of ghosts now. In other words,
right.
Are these really spirits that are physically dead but fully conscious? I mean, to be slapping and gouging eyes and doing things so specific, raising beds, all the things we see in the movies, throwing stuff around the room, furniture moving, there was a lot you didn't hear, all of that kind of stuff. Does that mean this is really that being, but from the other side, fully conscious as we understand it?
Well, consciousness, oh, what a realm that is. We
yeah.
have our unconscious, our subconscious. Consciousness is something that we center around our minds, our brains, and our skull. So these are entities with no brain, but yet they are a form of consciousness that existed at one time.
Okay, but he was asking this entity questions, and it was answering by slapping him.
Right, right. That I think the angrier they are and the more unfinished business that the spirit has, the more conscious it's going to be. And I know there are many that disagree and don't even believe in ghosts. They think that it's a psychological projection coming from the man's subconscious mind. And that's a very provocative theory. I have struggled with that one for years, that ghosts are all in the mind. Having never seen a ghost, it makes us all doubters and skeptics. But, hey.
If he's got photographs, videotape even better, and he does, of the bed coming up off the floor.
Yeah.
He said that he's got, on the videotape, you can see a kind of a fuzz spot as the entity moves about the room with the compass following it. He's got all of this on tape. This is real serious proof.
Well, yeah, but, you know, the naysayers would say, hey, that could be trick photography.
No, I don't think so.
So many frauds.
You know what? I listened to this guy.
He sounded so sincere.
Yeah, I don't think. I'm almost personally ruling that out.
But you know what the skeptics will say, Art. They'll look at that video. They'll go over it with a fine-tooth comb, but in a way, that's good. You're a healthy skeptic yourself. And your skepticism helps you keep in touch, keep a little down to earth.
Well,
you filter things that come your way. You filter stories. You put it through your... I've listened to you many times, and that's good. But you don't go as far as being a naysayer. You are open
oh, no.
to these possibilities.
Oh, yes. Well, look, when these things have happened to you, your life changes. I mean, when you see certain things and certain things occur to you, which they have to me in my life, if you ignore them, you're an idiot.
Right. They'll keep coming until they get your attention fully.
Right. And
have
now
you dealt with ghosts? Are you telling us?
No,
that you
I, okay. well, I have one situation, and it's interesting you should mention it. I interviewed this woman. I don't know if we talked about this on the program. I interviewed a witch. No, she wasn't a witch. That's not fair. The witches will get angry at me. She was a Satanist.
Oh, my. There's a big difference. Yeah.
That's why I said I quickly corrected myself.
Okay. She was a true Satanist.
We're going to be replaying that show this Saturday, this interview with a Satanist. Listen, we're at the top of the hour. Can you ladies hold on?
Of course, we'll be here.
Good, hold on, stay right there, and we will be right back. And I'll recount that very briefly. Well, you just never know what you're going to run into on any given night.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up.
Don't you cry, don't you give up tonight. Reach the other side. I was lonely, baby. I couldn't speak. The night that you...
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 17th of February 2000.
Good morning, everybody. Well, this song goes well for my friend of the last hour and a half prior to this last segment. Every day, I guess, a heartache, huh? Anyway, coming up, we will continue with my current guest, Dr. Katya Romanoff. Now, she doesn't use her last name, so we're going to just call her Dr. Katya. And Lori, both who normally come here and talk to us about dreams, and we are going to get to that because I've got a situation going on in my life with dreams, but it surely is trivial compared to what that poor man in West Virginia is going through right now.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 17th of February 2000.
All right, back now to my guests, Dr. Katya and Lori. Gals, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you for having us.
Any final thoughts on our friend in West Virginia, and then reluctantly I will turn my attention elsewhere?
Well, I would just love to know, you know, if these beings communicate with him in his dreams.
Oh, in his dreams.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't even ask that. He is unable to sleep during nighttime hours at all. I mean, this has been going on for 3 hours, so this guy sits up at night with lights, and sometimes, he said, a mask and strobe lights so that he can sleep. But when he does sleep, I guess mainly during the day, I don't know if it affects his dreams or not. But, the main reason, since I had interviewed the two of you before, and we had a really good interview on the air about dreams, as you know, something began to happen to me, and I picked up the phone, and I called you, and I began to tell you about what I'm going to describe tonight. In the information you sent to me, Lori,
yes,
you list five possibilities of dreams. Paranormal dreams, it says here, correspondence between physical conditions such as illness or pregnancy, whatever, and dream content. Two, contact dreams, dreams in which the dead communicate with us. Three, paranormal dreams, precognitive, telepathic, clairvoyant. Four, lucid dreams, being aware that you're dreaming while in a dream, our key to understanding the full range of consciousness, you say. And then five, past life dreams. Do our dreams show us our past lives? All fertile territory, no doubt, to talk about here on the air. But here it comes. The reason I called in the first place was because about a month ago, I think it's about a month ago, you know, times, it gets hard. I should have kept a better record. I began to have dreams. I had dreams all my life. I know what dreams are, and sometimes they seem really very real, but they always have involved me, and somewhere in the dream. I was in the dream. However, I began to have this series of dreams, gals, in which it's like, here's the way I can only describe it with these words. It's like I was dropped right into the life of another person, and I wasn't me. I wasn't observing this like a third person, or like you'd read a third person description in a book or something like that. Gals, that was me. I became a different person. Now, in these dreams, I know the places. I could go to the places. I know the people's names. I know my name. I know where I went to high school. I know what I did. I know where my locker was. It's a state that, other than a short stint in the Air Force, I never have set foot in. One dream, for example, in Mississippi, where I grew up. I mean, it's like I'm being dumped into somebody else's reality. And it completely is freaking me out. And it's not like any dream I've had in my life. Maybe it's a usual thing for other people, but, oh man, not for me.
Is it always the same?
No.
You're always the same character?
No.
No. Okay, good.
No. I can tell you the... I mean, I could go on with all details. I could give you as many details of these dreams, and I just gave you one example, as I can give you of my own real life.
Very vivid, then.
Scaring me, kind of.
So you're going to different regions of the United States, or are you? Do you sometimes go to other countries? And what about time?
No, it's always been. But all good questions. It's always been in this country so far, and it's always been. Not always. One time, I had a dream prior to the second, or at the beginning of the Second World War. Now, bear in mind, I was not born until 1945. All right? I'm 54 years old. June 17th of this year, I'll be 55. So, I had one dream that occurred prior to my own birth.
Okay. Any others? All the rest are contemporary.
No, none contemporary.
Oh, they're all in the past?
All in the past.
Because you mentioned high schools and lockers. But, of course, high schools and lockers existed at the turn of the century, so...
Oh, yes. Absolutely. But... Look, I guess I should put it this way. Without going into the details that I obviously don't want to read on the air, there are enough details that I have considered... I don't know. I've tossed around two ideas. One, actually finding the people... Because I know they're there. I know the town they're in. And talking to the people. Or even getting on an airplane and going to a couple of these places. Now, I'm really hesitant to do this, but I'm almost driven to do this. So that's why I called you now. In the dreams that you've lined up here to talk about, just exactly where, pray tell, does what's happening to me fit in? Any thoughts?
Well, it's a classic case of tapping into the collective unconscious. If your dreams were all in contemporary settings, which they're not, they would still be valid experiences where you're touching the minds or the life experiences of other beings, other human beings. But since some of them are historical, in a historical context, they could be genetic memory triggering something one of your grandparents, great-grandparents went through. Reincarnation, of course, past lives, is a whole kettle of worms. I've been grappling with reincarnation for years, and I'm not sure I believe in it, but I do believe in genetic memory. In other words, anything that your ancestors did, felt, experienced, you can access through your DNA. Every cell in your body has that same DNA code. The same DNA code is in your hair that's in the cells that make up your heart muscle.
Okay, but what, just out of curiosity, do you imagine might cause a man my age to, who's dreamt, just like everybody dreams, I think, which is a foolish statement because I don't know how everybody dreams, but... You know, I've had your run-of-the-mill, anything from terror to romance to funny stuff to sad stuff to scary stuff, but always just dreams. I know that if I make the trip, I'm going to find what I lived. And when I tell you I lived it, I mean I lived it. I'm going to find that. It's there. And I don't know if I want to know.
Well, we want to know.
Yeah, really?
So you need to go. You definitely. I would. What a case that would
yeah.
be.
The question really is, what would make somebody who's dreamt normally, in quotes, all their life, suddenly begin to dream in this utterly, completely different mode?
Your mind is suddenly open to it. You've reached a threshold.
Great.
You're at a new phase in your life.
Oh, great.
As the fortune teller told you, you're entering this new phase, and the barriers are coming down in your mind. All the doors come open when we sleep in our mind, and you're able to cross over to the other side. You've learned your lessons with regular, typical dreams. You've accomplished what needed to be accomplished.
Yeah.
And now the dream weaver is throwing this at you, saying, hey, how about this? It wants to get your attention to alert you to the other side. Again, in your profession, you deal with the paranormal every night.
I'm not happy about this. I'm serious. I'm not happy
about
these
dreams. You're not happy?
No, I'm not happy. No.
Are they literal or are
they
symbolic?
They're so literal. They're literal down to furnishings in the house. My mom, my dad, my relatives,
mm-hmm.
my brothers. And I don't have brothers, by the way, in real life. I have sisters. I could go on and on and on and on. So literal that it's got me sitting here jabbering about it to you. That literal. And so I've opened up to it. Huh? Well, I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know that I like dropping into somebody else's life like that. I felt all their, some of their happiness and a lot of their pain. And
sure, yeah. You were touching all the emotional highs and lows.
Yep. And put bluntly, it wasn't that cool. It wasn't that much fun.
Yeah.
Do you ever know their name or your name?
Yes.
You need to go to those towns and check it out.
I have a list here you might be interested in of the criteria that a past life memory dream will have to fit.
Okay.
I'll ask you the questions.
Fire away.
Okay, we already answered one, that the dreams are literal rather than symbolic. Now, are these dream remembrances accompanied by sensations completely unlike those you've experienced from other dreams?
These sensations, how can I put this?
Completely unlike your other dreaming method.
Yeah, absolutely.
You pretty much told us yes.
Yes, the answer to that is absolutely yes. In other words, I've dreamt all my 54 years to this point, and always afterwards I know that I just had a dream.
Right.
And I sit and analyze it. It was kind of interesting, and, you know, I mentally remember some of them, even relate some of them to my wife, that kind of thing. When you have an exceptional dream, but always I was very aware this was a dream, and I'm totally aware what I've been having is more than a dream, if that answers your question.
Okay. It does. Yeah, I'd say. Are you aware, while in the dream, that this is a past life you are experiencing?
No. It's just, no, I'm not aware of that, no. Not at all.
You're really living it.
I'm living it, the
yeah.
life. I'm. It's like I'm dropped. It just
like you're thrown back into it.
Like boom. You're mm-hmm. not thrown into it. I mean, really into it. Just completely immersed. Suddenly, you're living a different life. Period. No reference to the current life at all. None.
Right. That's that. You're still within the criteria. What's the next one, Laurie?
Now, you've had these recently, so this one might not fit you just yet, but is the dream so vivid that you can describe the slightest detail even years later?
Yes. The reason for that is because it was so shocking to me that, of course, when I awakened, I spoke to my wife about it, and I relayed a lot of the detail to her. And in doing that, it caused me to remember it in great detail, I think. That'd be a way to put it.
Right. It's always good to discuss a dream with someone. If you're not keeping a dream journal, it's good to discuss even not non-paranormal dreams. Your normal run-of-the-mill dreams aren't run-of-the-mill. Every dream has a message. But in your case, you're dealing with past lives here, the whole reincarnation issue. Have you, whatever your spiritual tradition is, Art, have you believed in reincarnation, or are you a disbeliever, so now perhaps these dreams are coming to you to say, hey, this is true? I mean, how personally, you know, I told you personally, I really struggle with reincarnation.
You're asking me a really, really
it's a hard one, I know.
Hard question, because I lean, to answer it as best I can, I lean toward the concept of reincarnation. It seems logical to me that a person would I'll come back, to put it simply, again and again, until they get it right. You know, the old schoolhouse
right.
earth thing.
Mm-hmm.
All of that seems like it's more logical than not to me, but I don't have conclusive enough evidence to say Art Bell believes in reincarnation.
Right.
I think it's logical.
It is. It's very, very logical.
And I've heard compelling evidence from people, you know, guests that... It's very compelling evidence. So I lean toward believing it may well be.
But it's still a struggle for you.
Yep.
Well, I think it's obvious why the dreams are coming to you. This, you need to deal with this and decide your opinion one way or the other. Perhaps
I have
you...
two more questions.
Oh, there's two more, Lori. Well, let's go.
No problem. All you want.
Okay. Has your attitude toward death and dying changed since having these dreams?
Give me a minute to think about that. We're at a break point here. Let me think about that. I think the answer is no, but I want to think it over. I'm Art Bell. And this is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 17th of February, 2000. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Obviously, I'm going to get away with using all my dream bumper music here. My guests are Dr. Katya and Lori. I'm Art Bell, and we are talking about dreams. I think they're dreams. Anyway, I think I've got a good answer, and it's coming up.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 17th of February, 2000.
Once again, Dr. Katya and Lori are on the air. And hi there, ladies. All right, here's my answer to your question. Again, I'm going to refer, believe it or not, back to last night, to the fundamentalists that I had on, because there were certain things that I really agreed with them about. You no doubt recently have heard, you asked me if my attitude on death and dying has changed, and the answer I think is no. But here is what my attitude I think is. Charles Schultz just died. You know, the man who did Peanuts.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Now, he did thousands and thousands of that series of Peanuts. It was all his adult life. And he died on the eve of his last one. He had announced his retirement, and he died on the eve of his last one. And the gentleman I spoke with last night thought that he regarded his mission as done, or his mission on Earth was done. And so it appropriately occurred to him. Or, you know, you can imagine a million different things. He brought it on himself mentally. It really was cosmically his time. God took him back at that moment. Think of it the way you will. I don't believe in that many coincidences, although, you know, maybe, sure, it could have been a coincidence, but not very likely one, in my opinion. So my attitude is that you're taken when you're done with what you're supposed to do. That's my attitude on death and dying, that you're kind of taken when you're done with what you're supposed to do. And who knows when that is, as I said to my wife during the break, until the symbol of the mighty Dodge is bearing down on you, or however it is you're going to go. You know? And you might not even have any warning. So I think we have some sort of mission to accomplish in this life, and then when you're done, you're done.
But are you recycled when you're finished?
Beats the hell out of me. I'm giving you an honest answer. I can't honestly say that I believe in reincarnation. I can't say that.
And your fundamentalist friends last night, they, as Christians, would disbelieve reincarnation, even though for the first four centuries of Christianity, reincarnation was standard belief. It was in the books. Reincarnation was believed by
Christians. Yeah, I know. They wouldn't want to hear that.
No, they wouldn't want to hear that. Emperor Constantine got rid of reincarnation at the urging of his third wife, who couldn't handle, she was a very vicious, nasty woman, and she couldn't handle the thought that she might have to come back as a lower life form because she was so mean and cruel. So she talked him into removing reincarnation from the doctrines. And, of course, you remember Emperor Constantine is the man who put Christianity on the map.
How comfortable could she have been doing that personally? In other words, certainly she might fool some other people down line, but she had to know herself that she was just using her wiles to get this done. It ain't the truth, so.
Right. Perhaps she felt, she had an ego complex, that she felt she really was forming this rising star religion. And she thought, well, maybe if I help form these doctrines, that's the way it's really going to be, in her fear of her own ego.
As it is written, so it shall be done.
Yeah.
That
God
kind of
is
thing,
complex.
Right? I see. Yeah, that could be. So what you're really, but the all-important point is, you're saying reincarnation was once viewed as real as any part of the Bible.
Oh, yes. All great religions, the major religions on the planet, believe in reincarnation or transmigration of souls.
Transmigration.
Hasidic Jews, the Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism teaches reincarnation, as well as early Christianity. And, of course, Hinduism and Buddhism. Very strong tenets there. It's good old reincarnation, but it's so hard to believe. But perhaps that's because we're wearing these veils of ignorance to keep us sane.
It's not hard for me to believe. It's hard for me to embrace as absolute fact.
I see what you're saying.
Can't come and tell you, boy, I know it's true. I'm so comfortable. I know I'm coming back or I've been back.
Right.
Can't say that.
It's very reassuring to tell those who've lost a loved one, don't worry,
yeah,
they'll
very,
come back. They'll
very
be
reassuring. But I go right to the other extreme. It's also possible in my mind that when we die, the worms crawl in and the worms crawl out, and there is nothing but velvet blackness.
Right.
Which
well, the worms are going to crawl no matter what, Art. Yes, your flesh is just your garment.
Yeah.
They're, you know, either you're going to be cremated or your worm food, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But your soul, your memories, the energy that is you,
right.
Is it going to exist? I often think that it's going to be stirred into the pool of souls. You sort of get stirred in and mixed up. So I think your dreams, you're touching on memories of other lives. Not necessarily lives that you lived, even. But yes, it could be. It could be reincarnation. But it could be...
Some of these lives that I've been in, or even the majority of them, have been lives that would have been parallel to my own. In other words, would have been going on when I was alive.
Yeah, see, so there you are. You are tapping into the pool of souls. We can reach out and touch. Computers can be connected. All the computers in one office building can be connected. So why can't all the minds...
In a network, yeah.
Yeah, networking. So you're interfacing here.
Well, I'm not so wild about it.
It's uncomfortable for you.
It's really weird.
Are they still going on?
Yes. May I ask you how many instances of what I have just described to you you've heard of before? Is it rare or common or what?
It's neither rare nor common. Somewhere in the middle there, I hear say several cases of this per year. But now we've got many listeners, and it will be fun to see how many have experienced this. Just 2 weeks ago, I had a similar report.
Really?
Yeah, and I thought,
Now, I'm not a dream researcher, but I have never heard of this before. You know, and until it happened to me, I'd not heard of it, or any reports of it, or I'd never had anything about it on my show either, with people saying this was happening to them. I've never had that.
It may be happening more now as awareness grows. We all get, again, we're all connected. Our minds are thinking on the same wavelengths. The whole cyclical time as we come back around to where we started from. Of course, I believe in linear time, too. That's another argument.
And these dreams could be happening more often than we all realize, because how many dreams during the night do you actually remember?
Right.
Usually, it seems like... not all the time. But generally, more times than not, the one you had just before you woke up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Definitely.
Or at least it sure seems that way.
Uh-huh. And that's why nightmares in the middle of the night will propel you into the waking state so that you will remember them. A nightmare, above all, wants to be remembered because it has the most powerful message for you.
These were
a positive one, so don't be afraid of it.
Let me tell you this. These were not, much as I say I'm not real happy about this happening, these weren't nightmares.
Right.
They were good and they were bad and they were just simply somebody else's life all together.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it a nightmare at all.
I wouldn't even call it a dream. It's almost as though they were experiences. You were using your subconscious to tap into someone else's experiences. It didn't seem like a dream or a nightmare. It's a whole nother realm in dream science. It's paranormal dreaming. It's beyond the psychoanalytical view of dreams.
Well, I'll say this to you. You know, I've been doing the show now in this mode, you know, talking about this kind of thing for a lot of years. And in the latter years of doing it, I have really begun to experience personally a lot of paranormal things you put in the paranormal basket.
Yes. We talked about this the last time we were on, and I really believe there's... In your profession, you cannot help but encounter this because you are an example for others and you communicate. You're a mouthpiece for the metaphysical realm.
That's what I am, a mouthpiece.
Nightly contact with the other side, with art.
But you see, not really. I mean, well, in other words, I have been, because I examine this, because I have my own real honest curiosity about it, I've interviewed countless people, all kinds of areas of the paranormal, everything you can imagine in the paranormal world. I've interviewed, I've talked to these people, I've listened to them, I've listened to their stories, and now it's getting me. I can only presume that my mind has begun to open to these things, and so they are now coming to me, and it's pretty weird.
Yeah, all change is uncomfortable, but it's always a good thing. You're moving forward in your evolution, your personal evolution. We're all evolving. We're moving toward integration. That's what dreams help us do. Our dreams are the royal road to the subconscious, as Sigmund Freud said.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the royal road to enlightenment, as C.G. Jung, Carl Jung said.
Occasionally, they're a lot lighter than that, too, though. I mean, you have all kinds of neat dreams. You have sex dreams. Sex dreams aren't bad.
No, of course not.
They're
fun.
Rather enjoyable, actually.
And remember, they come to balance our sexual energies.
They're generally big teases, you know. Dreams are big teases, but not always. Sometimes you justify a cigarette when you wake up, you know. So there's a lighter side to dreaming, too, and that really is a lighter side. Sometimes, and I was talking to my wife about this earlier tonight, she said she's been awakened at times by my laughing.
I wake myself up.
Dead asleep, but she wakes up, and I'm laughing.
Well, now, that's not REM sleep, obviously, if you're laughing.
What is it?
Talking
well, it
in
could
your sleep.
Be because he's not using skeletal muscles.
Skeletal muscles?
Your skeletal muscles are paralyzed when you go into REM sleep. Otherwise, you would get up and act it out.
Right, so we go into the brain is bathed in certain chemicals that keep you frozen during dream state. Or,
oh,
like
is that
said,
so? Is
you'd
that so?
You'd get up walking around the room acting out this dream.
Well, so then laughing is a physical activity that falls outside the realm, right?
I've always seen laughter in dreams in sleep labs. Laughter would occur in one of the other stages of dreaming, not REM sleep.
Not REM sleep.
No, it's just like talking in your sleep.
All right, well, there's the other thing.
It's
worth remembering that I sleep a totally bizarre schedule.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
I get off the air at, 3 o'clock in the morning local time here on the West Coast. And I might stay up for a couple hours, generally going to sleep around 5 in the morning, waking up around 9 in the morning, 5 to 9, let's say. Then again in the afternoon, about 4 o'clock or sometimes 5.
Right.
And
you have an entirely bizarre sleeping pattern. It's like the sleeping pattern of a soldier.
Yeah, maybe 7:30 in the evening, from 5 to 7:30 or 8 o'clock even, if I'm lucky. And so that's my sleep schedule for the day. And so then I must pass through these various stages of sleep
yes.
a whole bunch of times.
Yes. That's going to bring you more psychic dreams, too. Nap time, when a person takes a nap in the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
even if it's only for 30 minutes, some of the most psychic dreams, and when I say psychic, I mean of the soul. I don't mean the connotation that the word psychic has come to mean. I mean psychological. The most powerfully potent dreams will come during nap time. So you're kind of getting that. You're getting these naps. You're not deep, getting into the deep layers of sleep
mm-hmm.
where there's total dreamlessness.
The
that emergent
old black
stage.
Black velvet little slice of death, they do.
Right? I love that term.
Well, actually, I do too. And that's the sleep I would like to have. Dreamless sleep. There have been times, I think I said this to you before, when I've had dreams where I was so active that when I did wake up, I felt like I'd been working because I was dreaming of such a vivid
yes.
dream that instead of waking up rested, I go, God, glad that's over. Now I'm awake.
Yes, that's very common for people who have broken sleep patterns. You feel worse than when you went, I just should have stayed awake.
Yes.
Because so much is going on during your sleeping time.
Hmm.
And it needs to. That's what recharges your batteries. And I don't mean your physical batteries. Obviously, sleep does that.
Uh-huh.
But your brain needs to recycle. Your mind, your consciousness needs to go through that REM sleep. And it does need those nice dreamless sleep phases also. And usually laughter and sleep talking.
Yes.
Talking in the sleep.
Yes.
Usually those are just as we're emerging. The sleep state that's most akin to meditative states, you know, the gurus of India, though they meditate and they have visions. Well, they've measured their brain waves.
Yes.
When they do this.
Yes.
And other mystics of other traditions.
Yes.
And it's the same. It's the same.
Yeah, well, I wanted to mention the happy part of it to you, and this is not necessarily unhappy, but she also tells me that I moan and that sometimes I cry.
Right.
And that she has, on a couple of occasions, awakened me, you know, from that condition. And obviously didn't mention to me at the time that she woke me up because I was bawling or whatever. Crying, let's specify. Crying.
How do you feel when she awakens you? Do you remember? Do you feel any of the emotion?
Well, my wife is usually up before I am, so I'm used to my wife awakening me.
Ah.
So,
that would be interesting to see what you're feeling, what residue is coming into your waking. Because you're not supposed to interrupt a dreamer. Of course, we do it in sleep labs all the time. Because we want to know what they're dreaming.
Well, I'm not certain that the laughter or the moaning or the crying or whatever emotion comes out is because a dream is going on. I don't know that to be true. I just know it's happening.
Right. You are having a dream and you're responding to it with a full range of emotions. That's very healthy.
Okay.
It would be nice if you could remember the dream and deal with it, but it's okay if you don't. Because you'll get the same message in another form. That's the beauty of dreams. If you don't get it the first time, it'll come again and again, just like recurring nightmares and recurring dreams. That means we haven't gotten the message.
Gotcha. All right.
Okay.
Well, anyway, the heck with me. That's enough. I wanted to get that out because I guess I wanted to see if other people were experiencing it. I wanted to run it by the two of you. What I want to do next is allow the audience to get in here and say what they want to say. And so that's what we'll do as he grabs some more dream bumper music. Irresistible.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up.
In my arms, and know the magic of her charms, 'cause I want a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Dream lover, where are you with a love for by the blue top walls, near the market stalls, there's a hidden door she leads you to. These days, she says, I feel my life just like a river running through the ear of the cat.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Good morning, everybody. We're headed toward open lines in a moment, and I've got some pretty interesting stuff for you. you know, to me, that sax has always been like a bit of soul, so I always let it go. Anyway, I do have some interesting items for you, and then open lines directly ahead. Stay right there. All right, I've got a number of comments, and then we're going to open the lines here, and here they come. Number one, I have not for a long time paid attention to the political world, and I still don't very much, for a lot of reasons. I used to be a registered, at one time I was a registered Republican, and I got fed up with them, and so I became something else. I became libertarian. And that's, to me, the sign of a free thinker. And so it doesn't mean, some people seem to think it means that I would go out and always vote for the libertarian candidate. Well, that's bunk. And if that's what the libertarians think, then they enlisted the wrong guy. Or the wrong guy enlisted, depending on how you want to look at it. My vote will go for the person that I think I have a chance of believing. And that could be anybody, any party. And as I look at the landscape right now, I like Senator McCain. George Bush, W., gives me the creepies. When I look at him, I get the creeps. I really like McCain. McCain's like a real guy to me, I guess. He was a POW, as most of you know. And I don't know, when I listen to him, it sounds like the real thing to me. And when I listen to George W., it sounds like his dad to me. And sketchy as that is, those are my feelings about the political situation going on right now. Of course, McCain had a surprise and very big victory in New Hampshire, and now they're really scrapping down in South Carolina. So that's going to be the news through the weekend, primary coming on Saturday, and it's going to be big news. It'd be interesting to see what occurs. I just wanted to say to those who know that I'm libertarian, if you think that means that I automatically vote that way, you're crazy. And I don't think that's really true of any party affiliation. At least not for me. For some people, I guess when they join a party, they automatically pull the ballot for, you know, the person in that party. That's not me. Never has been, never will be. Now, check this out. Associated Press, tonight. Flaw found in Mars lander's design. Pasadena. A flaw in the design of NASA's Mars polar lander could have caused its engines to cut off prematurely while the $165 million spacecraft was descending to the surface, said the engineers on Thursday. The glitch is the latest of several possibilities under investigation into why the spacecraft has not made contact since December 3rd. It was supposed to have gently landed, you'll recall, to begin a 90-day mission to study Mars climate history. Other scenarios include the possibility that the spacecraft landed on some steep side of a canyon and toppled over, or the radios broke down. You know, they don't know. But the late news is that the signals they thought they were getting from the lander have now been apparently ruled out by NASA as lander signals. And it was kind of interesting because you may recall that Dame said the lander burned up in the atmosphere. And even on the day that the story came in where they thought they had signals from the lander, Ed Dame said, no. Remember what I said, it burned up in the atmosphere. Well, guess what? Now it looks like that's an equal possibility at the very least, that it may have fallen into a canyon and can't get up, although that would not account for the lack, of course, of the UHF signals. So the highest likelihood, it seems to me now, is that it did, in fact, burn up in the atmosphere. Now, the following is just hours old. You may have heard the reference, Dr. Katja and Lori made to our sun. The following is from Space Science News, February 18th, so you can check it out yourself. Subject, a coronal mass ejection heads for Earth. Space Science News for February 18th, 2000. Here comes the sun. A full halo, that's in quotes, full halo coronal mass ejection left the sun yesterday, apparently headed directly for Earth. When the leading edge of the disturbance reaches our planet, February 19th or 20th, it may trigger aurora and other geomagnetic activity, and then they go on to point to the full story. We'll try and get this up for you on the website. I'll pass this link on to Keith here shortly, and we'll get it up on the website. But if true, that certainly is very interesting. So is this. And I talked to Richard Hoagland about this earlier in the day. Reuters News. Sinking water levels have apparently revealed a granite sarcophagus of the ancient Egyptian god Osiris in a 30-meter deep tomb at the Giza Pyramids. That, folks, is a quote from Zahi Hawass himself. Osiris, of course, one of the most important gods of ancient Egypt, who, according to mythology, was murdered by his wicked brother, Seth. He was buried by Isis, his sister's wife, and brought back to life as judge of the dead and ruler of the underworld. Dr. Hawass said the sarcophagus, which he dated 500 B.C., in the New Kingdom, was surrounded by the remains of four pillars built in the shape of a hieroglyph called the House of Osiris. The excavation unearthed 3,000-year-old bones and pottery found in the underground water, he said. He said, quote, I never excavated this shaft because it was always full of water, but when the water went down about a year ago, we began the adventure, he told Reuters. After dirt and most of the remaining water was cleared from the shaft located between the Sphinx and the pyramid, archaeologists found three underground levels with the submerged Osiris sarcophagus at the lowest. Many people believe there were tunnels going to the Sphinx and another leading to the Great Pyramid. But only when we sent, get this, folks, a young boy into a tunnel in the west wall of the tomb shaft did we find this exciting discovery, according to Dr. Zahi Hawass. And then here's one more item that I really had to get on the air this morning. This is dated February 16th, Auckland, New Zealand. And you can find it, if you want, on Yahoo News. The headline is, Global Sea Level Rise to Flood Parts of Tuvalu This Weekend. That's Tuvalu, T-U-V-A-L-U. Check this out. Global warming and the associated sea level rise will threaten residents of Tuvalu this weekend with tides. These are tides now, folks. Forecast to be higher than most of the islands they live on, according to a climate expert Wednesday. Homes, offices, the airport there, all expected to be flooded, underwater. So, what they're saying, scientists are saying spring tides have been getting steadily higher, causing serious problems. But this month, they will get the highest ever. The island, home to about 11,000, the groundwater already has become undrinkable thanks to seawater intrusion. But according to one resident who says it's very hard to live here right now, shortly, it apparently is going to be impossible to live there. Now, if global warming had any validity, depending on whether you want to believe in global warming or reject it and just believe in big cycles, when islands begin to disappear under the water, inhabited islands begin to disappear under the water, then you've got to imagine something real is going on. Has nothing to do with storms or anything else. Simply consistently raising higher and higher tides. Now, I will leave it to you, because obviously the scientists have no clue, except they feel global warming. That's what they say. And I know a lot of you, for political reasons or reasons of whatever belief, reject the whole concept, which is fine. But you're going to have to make up a good reason for islands beginning to disappear. People who are going to have to begin evacuating islands because they're going to be gone under the water. Just something for you to ponder. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, is this Art Bell?
It is, yes.
Hi, I have an answer for the guy who has the forest on the land of the burial ground.
Native American, yes.
Yes, I'm Native American. And I think it has something to do with, it is on the burial ground, and he needs to contact a shaman for sure. He should get off of it, and there's something to call it, like a sage.
So you would say, you know, he was warned that his life could be in danger. You agree with that?
Yes, I think
you do.
I think so. I really believe so. And it's amazing it hasn't happened before, you know. I think maybe it has, but no one's ever believed it. You know?
Well, you know, it's really easy to advise somebody to get the heck out, and I understand that, but when the land is generational, it's been passed on down to you, when you're disabled, when you've built your own house, when you've lived there all your life, then maybe it's not so easy. It's easier for us to say than it would be for him to do.
Also with Indians, I mean, think about what they've been through. They've lived there for generations themselves, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
you're right. Maybe
I think
that's
sage might help.
Sage advice or sage? Sage.
No, sage as far as the sage plant.
Sage plant, huh?
Yes.
All right. Well,
that does help.
Let's consider that pass on then. I think sage wisdom is a good idea too, and the wisdom might be to get the hell out. It is really easy advice to dispense, as, you know, we dispassionately, to some degree at least, sit here and we're not in his shoes, in his house, on his land. And so it's easy to say, and for him, understandably, I mean, after all, his mother left, his fiancée left, and he's lost a lot of the people, friends that he knew, who will not come around anymore. So I don't know. People make their choices, I guess, you know. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, it's Mission Layer Jet Tim from Cold Lake, Alberta, Canada. How are
yes,
you?
Sir. I'm fine.
You know, I should give you an update on the astronauts, but maybe I'll do that another time. There's an interesting story that happened up here in the second group. But
second group, what do you mean?
We've had two groups of astronauts up here training for cold.
That's right, up in Canada training. Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Up here on just off of our base.
Right. Right.
First group had a very easy goal. It was just below zero during the day, but the second group it was minus up to 37 at night.
Well, they got more severe training.
Yeah. This third group comes in March, and by then it should be maybe the grass will be growing. Who knows? But you know, your favorite movie, one of your best movies, is The Seventh Sign with Demi Moore.
That's right.
And I was just thinking about something earlier tonight. Remember when the signs is when all the fish started dying and showing up on the shores? And you know what happened in Europe? The Danube, the rivers leading into it?
I sure do.
The fish destruction?
I know.
Has anybody mentioned this or even thought of that? But
you know what? It's far beyond that. It's cyanide, but now it's heavy metal. And they say the heavy metal released is actually, in the long run, far more dangerous. The rivers could have been brought back. The cyanide would have eventually dissipated. But the metals will keep it dead down to the microbial level for actually years and years and years. They have no idea, perhaps even permanently, from our point of view as mortals. Can you imagine killing that?
That's never happened before, I don't think. To that level, anyways.
Well, there was Chernobyl. That was a pretty permanent disaster.
That, you know, and they're reaping the benefits of that in Europe still because of...
I know.
You know, from childhood.
And then the sarcophagus they built over that is crumbling. And there are thoughts that it is not safe. And there could be an explosion at Chernobyl. They don't know what's going to happen. So we're making some really big, bad, permanent mistakes. And permanent, at least from our mortal point of view. In the long run, cosmically, everything will be all right.
Funny story. Funny story. The astronauts, you want to hear this one, Art?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, this is kind of inside information. So if the NASA people are listening, just sit back and relax, okay? But the first group of people that came in, they were payload specialists and whatnot, like nuclear scientists, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was a beautiful summer's day in the middle of the winter, and they had an easy goal, and the guy in charge of the camp decided that it was time to move the camp because it's all about working together and doing what you're told.
Yeah.
So anyways, he said, it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and he said, beautiful day, it was just above zero. Okay, we're moving the camp, and I guess the rest of the people didn't want to do it. And they got together, and they came back to the guy in charge, who is a sergeant major, retired from the Canadian Forces, the old British sergeant major.
Yeah.
And they said, this is the way it works. Not speaking for NASA, but as a group. We're on the shuttle. If we want to do something, we get together, we have a discussion. And if we decide that we're not going to do it as a group, we make the decision, and that's the way it works. So we're not moving camp. So he just let it ride, and he waited to 2 o'clock that morning.
Yes.
And he did a complete bug-out. You're ex-Air Force. You know what a bug-out is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They did a bug-out.
Not only that, but I'm an ex-Air Force medic, so I really know what it is.
Yeah, that's right, big time. So 2 o'clock in the morning at minus 25 to move the camp. So the repercussions of that hit big time, hit Texas. And the head of NASA training for the astronauts flew up the next day.
Yeah.
Read the Riot Act. The guys and said, listen, if you're told to do something, you will do it.
Yep.
And since that, things are really on track now, and they've got another course coming down.
All right. Well, listen, I've got to go because we're at a break point here. I appreciate it, and particularly your description of a zero day is beautiful. What they do on the radio up there in the morning, you know? It's zero out there, and it's beautiful. Welcome to the day, they say on their morning shows. Question mark.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 17th of February, 2000.
We have now confirmed the link, and if you'll go to my website, the story that I read you earlier is available for your perusal. We've got a link up right now, and if Keith would be kind enough, because of the importance of this, to please put a link in the latest news so you see it right away when you go on the webpage. You know what I mean, right, Keith? The headline reads, "Here Comes the Sun." This is from Space Science News for February 18th, 2000. In other words, a few hours ago, and it's called "Here Comes the Sun." A full halo coronal mass ejection left the sun yesterday, apparently headed directly for Earth. When the leading edge of the disturbance reaches our planet on February 19th or 20th, it could trigger aurora and other geomagnetic activity. And we're going to take you to the full story. Now, there are other associated problems with such a big blast from the sun, which could include disruption, obviously, of telecommunications. It could even, in a very severe form, knock out satellites and do all kinds of things. So if you'll check my website, post haste, I'm sure you'll find the full story, which begins, as I just suggested, "Here Comes the Sun."
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 17th of February, 2000.
Well, all right. Yes, indeed. I'm on the page myself. Right now it's on the links page. I would have to check back. But when you get on the left-hand side, you'll see related links, and you can click on that. Keith, I'm sure, is about to get it under the latest news items so that you can just easily do it from the front page for a while here. But they have this really neat picture of this incredible halo, a full 360-degree halo, leaving the sun and blasting in literally all directions. Pretty neat stuff on my website right now. It says website links mentioned on air are posted here. Just click on that. It takes you to the links. When you get to the links, just go down to something called "Here Comes the Sun" and take a look. And the effects of this, apparently, will arrive here on Earth on the 20th. So if you begin to see aurora, you'll know why. In the meantime, go up to my website and take a look. This is wild. On the international line, you're on the air. Hello.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Hi. Name's Wolf from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada.
Welcome.
Hi. Got a story related to you. I was hoping you could help me. Is it like your Paris trip you had years ago?
Yes.
But it was a conscious thing. I was going along one time with a buddy of mine hunting, and
you're going to tell me you had an out-of-body experience while you were hunting?
Well, no, we were going to the hunting lodge there.
Yeah.
Driving down the road in the pickup truck. I was a passenger.
That's good.
And I was going along, and we were basically having an Art Bell discussion, UFOs, hauntings, and such. So
yes. There may be your basic problem right there.
Well, and he thinks of himself as a bit of an armchair, psychiatrist or whatever. Anyways, he said, "Will you ever try astral projection?" And I go, "Well, what's that? How do you do it?" So he described, what you do. You leave your body. I go, "Well, okay." He says, basically, you concentrate, you build a television set in your mind, and you fill in the television screen with what you see in front of you, and then you push yourself into it.
Really?
And
riding along, thought, "Oh, what the heck," and tried it.
Exactly. I do the old Canadian thing. I put the old toque over my head to concentrate better over my eyes, and I build, the screen of the... this old, dash on the truck there.
Yes.
And the road and everything. And I go, okay, I'm all set. And then he says, okay, just push yourself into it. So I pushed. I pushed in. Pushed forward. It's not working, right, obviously. So I go, okay, well, I'll try pushing back. So next thing you know, pow, I'm out of my body. I'm in the back of the bed of the truck. I go, okay, all right.
I wouldn't go, okay, all right. I'd go.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm
holy.
Just telling you know what
something.
Was, yeah, going through my mind at the time. I go, okay. You know, wind's blowing through my hair, but I don't feel any temperature, right? Sort of like, you know, you can feel the wind and everything, but and the stars are out and everything. And I'm sitting in the back of the bed of this truck going. So I bend down there and I look inside the back of the, because it has the big window in the back, and I look inside and there's me.
There's the back of your own head?
No, no, I'm in the back of the truck, like sitting, you know, in the bed of the truck.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes. I understand, but you look into the truck and you...
Yeah, so I bend down and I look inside the truck. Hey, like, you know, there's my buddy driving and there's me looking straight ahead.
And so you're sitting in the back of your head, aren't you?
Right, yeah, with my tooth gone and everything. Eh?
Oh,
and he's looking over at me and
brother.
He's driving, he's looking over at me. So, okay, I'm going, all right.
Only Canadians take things like this. Okay, so
yeah.
There I was sitting.
Yeah, so I figure, okay, I'll try that pushing forward thing now, eh?
Good
idea. Next, you know, my feet come up, and I'm floating up over the back of the bed of the truck, eh?
Oops.
All right, okay. So
weren't you beginning to get concerned a little?
Yeah, exactly. I've wanted to tell somebody for some time there. Anyways, so I go along, and I push a little bit further. A little
yes.
bit further,
yeah.
And I'm, like, right over the lights now, eh, of the front of the truck, eh. And, you know...
Any further than that, and the truck is going to go thumping over you.
Well, no, I'm
your astral body, that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but I'm up over the truck, eh.
Well, okay.
So I look down, and there's the mist, and there's the, you know, the lines on the road and everything. Okay. That's when I kind of freaked out a little bit, eh. So I go at the back of the, in the bed of the truck again, eh. Okay, so I get a little more nerve up, and I try it again. I get up floating again. I go past the lights. I just figure, well, I'll just follow the road, eh? So I take basically a mental note of all the traffic that I see as long as I'm going along the way, eh? Way off in the distance, I see these transport, or it turns out to be a transport, these lights. Turn out to be a transport truck, and then a motorcycle, and then this, and then that, and, you know, taking mental note of, you
the
know,
traffic,
houses.
Yes. Right.
So, I'm going along. I might have gone maybe, you know, 10, 15 miles. Suddenly, everything disappeared. There was nothing. There was no stars. There was no road. There was no nothing. It was just blackness. I think, okay, what did I do?
What did you do?
I just waited, basically. I waited, it seemed like I waited for, you know, just a few minutes, maybe 5 minutes, and then everything came back into focus again.
In your body?
No, like I'm going down the road, and I'm just sitting out there in the middle of nowhere. I'm just like, there's nothing. There's suddenly, what do they do, go out of the universe?
yeah, exactly. All right, so?
I don't have anybody to talk to. I'm just by myself here alone.
No, I got you. So you're still...
I wait, and like I said, everything came back. Into focus. It was sort of like, if you can imagine, a good analogy would be like coming out of hyperspace in Star Wars.
I hear you.
Suddenly. You know what I mean?
Yes. So how did you get back to your body?
Well, I figured, okay, everything's cool. All right. I went down the road a few more miles, and I figured, okay, well, maybe I should start hitting back, eh? So I call it relaxing, eh?
Is that
so
what you call it?
What's that, sorry?
Is that what you call it?
Yeah, I call it just relaxing. Like, I just sort of, like, shrugged my shoulders, relaxed, and I was at the back of the truck again.
Maybe after the 35th time you've done it, but this experience to me, as a first experience, sounds flat terrifying.
That's probably why I've never tried it since. But that was one of the questions I was going to get to you there eventually. So, okay, I relax some more, and I'm at the back of the truck, right?
Yep.
And then I relax some more, and then I'm back in myself.
Back in yourself.
Right, back in my body.
Yes.
So I relate this whole story to my buddy, and I tell him all the traffic I saw on the farmhouses and, you know...
Can I make a guess?
Shoot.
You guys get to your destination, and your friend refuses to give you a gun.
Oh, no. Well, you should have. It gets worse. So I just finished relating this whole story to him, right?
Yes.
And way off in the distance, there's that transport truck. And then the motorcycle and then the farmhouse.
Oh, man. Yeah, so here comes everything you saw.
Right. So I one of the questions I was going to ask you was that, is that like, okay, like when you did that Paris trip, would you say that's sort of like when you're at...
No, no. There, between what occurred to me and what you have just described occurred to you, there is no relationship.
Well, yeah, okay, but I mean, just the whole idea about mapping the future, so to speak. Like, you go down the road, you map.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I get the spirit of everything
yeah,
you said.
Like, sure. Is an out-of-body experience, or can it be actually traveling the future also, or would you call it that?
Here's what I would say, that everybody that I have spoken with regarding out-of-body astral travel, whatever you want to call it, says that there is not linear time nor space as we know it in within the dimensions that we now live. So that when you're out of that, seeing the future, seeing time as depicted with this wonderful analogy of the road and what's down the road, would be entirely possible. That's all I can tell you, and that's all I know. And it was not at all like what happened to me. And only a Canadian can be laid back enough to tell a story the way he told it. And so, you know, I pushed back, and there I was in the back, and then I pushed up, and I was up on top, and then I was on the front near the headlights, and, you know, sort of matter-of-factly, if you will. Canadians are so laid back about things. Me, I would have totally freaked out. Completely freaked out if that happened to me. I never could have described it that way. Hey, first time caller line, you're on the air.
Oh, good evening. Let me turn my radio off.
Good.
Getting back to the dream subjects.
Yes.
I've had a life of sensitives around me, and it's been about 45 years of different dreams. And even I was able to interpret one that saved my ex-husband's life. Anyway, the gentleman that was talking about tornado
yes.
dream with no one listening.
Yes.
Reoccurring dreams are very important. They're like the Lord is telling you because you're so busy that sometimes the only way he can get through to you yep. is through your dreams.
Well, that's why I pressed the ladies a little bit about the possibility of it being precognition.
Well, sure, Buddy Holly. You dreamt of being in an airplane and crashing into a schoolyard over and over and over until it finally happened. And everything is in symbolic. My daughter had a tornado dream for years until she was in one, and then she didn't have them anymore. And the very fact that he is having this dream now, part of it's already materialized because no one is listening. They sure
well.
Weren't. And they're very personal. Dreams are very personalized.
Well, what's going on? What's going on right now? Here's why it bothered me. All right, I'll just lay it straight out for you. You've obviously seen, unless you've had your head in the sand, what's been going on in Georgia in the South
oh, yeah.
in January and February, which never, ever should be. And our weather is going bonkers. Now, if somebody in Phoenix is dreaming about tornadoes...
Really?
You know, I'd like to say I'm surprised and that's silly because they don't have tornadoes in Phoenix. To which I would now add, usually.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the call. I mean, what else can you say?
Yep.
Hi there. Wild card line, you're on the air.
Oh, let me turn my radio down.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Hey, you mentioned about the that event on the sun. I'm not by my computer now. I was there earlier in the evening. You're saying this occurred on the 17th?
The 18th.
Okay. Okay, that's why, because I was at 9 o'clock Pacific time, I was on the... checking all the charts, I didn't see anything, any x-ray flux. So you must be seeing it, because I know on your website you have that little solar watch panel.
Yeah, it's not on that,
right.
Although it may be. I don't know. I can only read you what, in fact, is reported in Space Science News for February 18th.
Right, because that's, obviously, when that thing occurred, that x-ray flux, which is obviously the first you know, thing that
the
hit
the first blast, yeah.
Yeah, that thing must have just jumped. You know, you do you remember when you had that article you were discussing about in May when the solar wind went to minus like 98%, it dropped?
It almost stopped cold,
right.
Actually.
I remember seeing that. That was phenomenal. You had a caller the very next day at the top of the hour, unfortunately, and he was saying that if that did in fact occur, because he never saw the article, he was saying that all those particles that are normally supposed to be flowing out of the sun, if they got trapped in the sun due to some gravitational anomaly, that those particles would be cooking and cooking until some major event would release it. And then he was right at the top of the hour. He was going to go into the...
Yeah, we're really off into conjecture territory. You know, the scientists really don't understand all of this.
Right. But that's kind of huge, a halo...
Yeah, you can actually see they've got them. You know, if you take several GIF photographs,
right,
which they've got up there, and you put them in sequence,
right,
you can actually see the motion, and you can see this halo blasting away from the sun. So when you get near your computer,
yeah,
you got to see this one.
And I'll tell you, too, and watch the events now the next couple days, because remember when there was that big, huge spike in our magnetic field, I think, days?
I sure do.
Yeah, and then just watch a couple days.
It went straight off scale. They couldn't even measure it.
Exactly, and you'll see all of a sudden there'll be either a run of 6-point earthquakes or more, or you'll see the last solar storm we had, then there were the tornadoes in Georgia. And, it doesn't really take a rocket scientist to figure out the connection here.
Yeah, there is. I have thought for years and years and years I have been connecting solar activities with earthquakes.
Well,
that's my own little pet thing that I've been following for years.
Yeah, you and me both, because of the fact is that, just through the common sense, if you're taking on this type of energy, where is that energy going to go?
Yeah. I talked to Jim Berkland about this,
right,
and he went, yeah.
Right.
So... It'll be interesting to watch the next few days in more ways than one.
Yes, sir. Great show, Art.
Right, thanks for the call. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Art.
Yes.
Listen, what's your experience is a bleed-through from somebody else's dream, somebody else's subconscious?
You think so?
Yeah, it's probably another member of your soul group. And what's happening is your psyche's reaching out to them for additional psychic energy. So if it's a contemporary process, you should try to seek that person out so you can pull your psychic energy. In fact, the process is actually called dream sharing, and a lot of the indigenous peoples engage in it.
There are so many details that checking this out, I mean really checking it out, if necessary getting on a plane and going to check it out, would be something I could do. Now, I haven't decided it's something I'm going to do.
Uh-huh. Well, I would just follow, your feeling about it, your intuition, and if it feels like something you think you should do, it may be happening for a person here. I mean, a purpose. You've got a lot of things going on in your life. You've got a lot of pressures and all. And
I do, yes.
Maybe this extra psychic energy is there to help you. I hope so. You're my hero, man. The truth is out there.
I'll put in a vote for that one, too.
You're my hero. The truth is out there. If anybody finds it, it's going to be you.
Thanks.
Good luck, buddy.
Later. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art. I made it through.
Just barely. I mean, we're almost out of time here.
This is Mike in Puyallup, Washington State.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hey, I just wanted to say on those black triangles.
Oh, yes.
I saw one in 1982.
Well, then you are a constituent of Peter Gersten's and causes.
Well, this was strange. It was at a carnival on a golf course in New York State. And,
as good a place as any, I guess.
Yeah, it came over it kind of like hovered over a patch of trees, and it stopped right above me and three other people. And we just...
Mm-hmm.
Looked up at it for, I don't know how long, but it just, kind of grew small.
Oh, you heard probably Peter Gersten, didn't you?
Earlier, yeah.
You know, the guy going to court about the black triangles?
Yeah.
When the government comes back and they have to lay all this evidence on the table of the search they did in the emails and all the stuff the judge wants,
mm-hmm.
What do you think they'll have in their hot little palms?
No, I think maybe just, there had to have been thousands and thousands and thousands of people that see these things. You know, and if it's our military crap, then obviously we got the power to go to the stars, because I saw that thing take off.
I don't disagree with one word you're saying, but what I'm asking, though, again, is what you think the government will come back with.
I think they might come back with some people filing reports. and that's about it. You know what I mean?
Listen, yes, I of course I know what you mean.
And nothing else. Nothing
listen,
else.
File this report for me right now. Tell everybody good night.
Yeah, good night, America and the rest of the world.
Uh-huh.
Watch out for those blacked out stars.
Yeah, indeed, watch out. All right, folks. For me, for this week, that's it. I'm Art Bell from the high desert, where it's been raining and will again soon, and the sun's coming. Good night.